It's a wonderful thing.
Wow.
So I'm talking to Kim Benzie, lead singer with Dead Letter Circus. And Kim, you're here because you guys have got a new album that you're promoting, obviously. And it's called Dead Letter Circus.
Yeah, inventive.
We'll get on to a bit about your band in general in just a minute. But can I ask you about this new album?
Mm.
Reading about you guys, you're often referred to as alternative rock or perhaps progressive rock.
Yeah.
How does this new album musically fit in with what you've been producing up until now?
Well, we're a journey band, so we're not one of those bands that does the same one over and over again. We're progressing in a line, I guess, purely because we write music to please ourselves first and foremost, and we just don't like repeating ourselves, I guess. So we're not, some bands kind of lock into their sound and it really works. It's probably a better more successful model because you're not alienating any fans from the past. Well, we're always moving forward in the direction. So you might, some people love our new stuff. But then we're making new fans that like, some people like
your older stuff.
Glued into our older stuff and haven't, find the new stuff like such a departure from that. Whereas, forgot what I was saying there.
So what about this new album? Progression from what?
It's a change. Once again, So it's just us. We're progressing and progressing as humans as well. Like we're the reason it's called a self-titled album, the reason it's self-titled is it's a bit of a testament to our brotherhood within the group. Like we're really good friends. We are our small circle of friends. Like we're not, it's not something we come together to do. Like we have our barbecues, we raise our children together. So we're like a little tribe, I guess. And it was such a seamlessly easy album for us to do, and they've actually got easier as the years go on, to the point where I feel like if we had to, we could do one every year, if there was facilities for that to do it, and and someone pay for it, obviously, because we want to do it in our bedroom. it still costs a lot to do a rock album.
Yeah. And it is, just on that, I mean, listening to it, I've just had a chance to have a preview of it. And there's a lot of guitar in there, it seems to me. It feels like a rock album.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah. We are a jam band, so we don't, I will begin an idea as a keyboard idea, generally, or a simple guitar. Like, I can play guitar, I'm not awesome at it. Especially not compared to the other guys, but I'll bring in a really simplistic idea and then we'll jam on that idea for half a day, 3 days, a week, whatever it takes. We'll just keep going until we get it.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, that's why it sounds so cohesive when you're listening to everyone, because we do that jam thing, and we don't, we put that into our planning. So generally, I'll start the first ideas. We'll do 2 weeks of writing for an album. The last 2 hours, we did the same process. 2 weeks of freeform jamming. 2 weeks with the producers there. And so they come in and we show them our 4-day-long songs or whatever, and then that, they'll have an opinion, they'll adjudicate between us as we are, as we battle it out, which bits, what arrangements are right and that kind of thing. And then we just begin executing it. And we found if you give us an unending timeline, we will write forever. It doesn't work for us. We respond well to a deadline.
Yeah.
Because it's like we just have a, we need a start and an end point.
Yeah. Now, as you say, it's a self-titled album, which leads to an obvious question, I guess, about the name of your band, Dead Letter Circus.
Yeah.
For Kiwis who haven't caught up with you, where does that name come from?
It's a secret.
Oh.
Yeah. We don't talk about it.
Oh, okay. Well, forgive me for asking, but let's put it this way. It's a really interesting name.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you hear lots of names of bands, and I can't think of a... Another thing to say is there's no immediate idea that pops into my head about where that's coming from.
Well, the only clue is, right now, we are in the circus. We're here. We're all big fans of The Matrix.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's fair enough. The circus of life is where we are right now.
Yeah, we're in the game.
Yeah.
We're plugged in. We're in The Matrix. And so that's as much as I can say. I've probably actually broken protocol by taking you that deep.
Oh, well. That's interesting you've used that word deep, because I've brought some lyrics with me, Kim.
Yeah, I spent a lot of, I'm kind of proud of those lyrics.
Yeah, no, well, this is to the first two songs in the new album, The Armor You Own and The Real You.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's a They are deep. They are, there's an element of introspection and looking inward there, I think. That's what I get out of it. Tell me about where you're coming from with your these songs. Yeah.
Well, The Arm You Own was a conversation between myself and my son. And he came home and he said, he goes, Dad, I think I've got the anxiety. And I was like, do you think you feel like you're feeling anxious? And he goes, I think so. And he explained it and he said, well, I feel like when I'm in a group of people, I'm scared to talk because if they all look at me at the same time, I might say something stupid and then they'll judge me. And I was like, well, that's not really anxiety yet. That's just a normal part of growing up. And so and the song reads, if you read it now, you know that it's basically the conversation between myself and him. It's a one-way conversation. He's not saying anything. I'm just telling him what's up.
And there's a very interesting part about, and this I think it's partly comes in with the other song I want to ask you about, but in The Armor You Own, the right at the end there, it says you'll step out from the tower that's kept you safe. It's almost like we build a little protective bubble around ourselves.
Well, that's me, so... Basically, at some point, I'm not going to be here to answer his questions like I just did. So I'm the tower, and
he's going to move. Yeah, right.
But what I was explaining to him, I said, like, you know, he's been practicing this, which is good. I said, like, when you have these little moments, right, rather than think of them as that, so the only person that's trying to defeat you in the moment is yourself, right? It's your mind. None of those other people don't know you're thinking that.
Mm.
I said, so you just think of it's just a little challenge. If you overcome that challenge in that moment, you're going to grow a little piece of armor, which you'll carry forever, so it's your own spiritual armor. And I was saying that the armor you grow is the armor you own. And we're having this really deep conversation, you know, like, I had a child very young, so this child is 15.
I was just about to ask you how old he was. Yeah, 15, that's at the age when you're going to be asking yourselves those things.
Yeah, and it was accidental pregnancy. So so as it was, like, really good mates, and I went, and we're having this full D&M, and then I went, a true me form, because I can't stay serious for too long. I went, look, I know we're trying to have a father and son moment here, but I feel like I'm writing a song at the moment, and this is the perfect thing. So are we done here? And he goes, yes, Dad, we're done. Can we hang out later? I was like, yeah. I'm gonna go down and write a bunch of lyrics, and said I'm probably gonna talk about you having the anxiety in the interview down the track.
Yeah.
And he goes, and then
the thing about that though, Kim, is that although that's about a specific conversation you had with your son, I would suggest that there'd be millions of parents out there who could relate to that.
Yeah.
Because it's all part of what we do as a parent and as a youngster growing up. And that, I mean, it's great that he could talk to you about it for a start, and you were prepared to listen and engage with him.
Yeah, for a little bit. Until.
What about the other song? I think it's the first single, Real You. The Real You.
Yeah.
And that's got an element of, you know, I don't know, you tell me, but just to get this conversation.
I'm always interested in what people say.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing about, because I see right through this new millennial you, brings to mind kind of, you know, young people who are living almost a virtual life on social media in a digital internet age, and maybe aren't actually doing face-to-face stuff very much, and are creating some sort of artificial identity for themselves in some sort of weird virtual space. Is that kind of where we're heading on that one?
About an eighth of it.
Okay.
When I wrote that one, I was basically, we're doing the finishing off an acoustic album. I was doing harmonies and I was spending a lot of time on my own. I was sleeping on the floor of the studio. There was no budget for a comm, so I was on a Maddie. I'd go to the shop, and I was just a lot of introspective time. And I went to the shop, and everyone was just, it was like a phone zombie apocalypse. Everyone's just walking around like this, and I was like, whoa, it's how epic. But then I started thinking about my own interactions with technology, and I pull up to the traffic lights and I feel like I need to check my phone because I'm used to being stimulated so constantly, which I'll come back to later.
Mm.
Then I started thinking about when I was going, okay, every time when we as a species have some epic advancement, right? So think about our parents' age. They lived through the age of convenience where everything was like faster, cheaper, whatever, salt reduced, fat reduced. And so, and the byproducts of that were, we have factory farming, one of the worst fucking things on the planet. And then all the diet issues of a generation of people that think they're supposed to eat a certain way, that they're just riddled with fucking cancer and, diabetes and stuff like that. So I was going, so what is going to be our byproduct of this thing, this amazing thing that we've got? Because it is an amazing thing. You know, we now have a hive mind.
Think about it. It is
connected with instant access to information. But then what we've also got as a byproduct is this, we've created this thing that we like to look out of, this social media, I want to see what my friends are doing. And, it's part of our everyday habitual lives.
So, yes.
Like, you think about when's the last time you didn't look at Instagram for the day. And you go, what's old man up to? Whatever. You know, it's like a private TV show.
Yes.
No. But what it's forcing us also is to participate, you start creating a mask, I guess, to and one of the things about becoming an adult is when you're a kid, part of your thing that happens in your 20s is you drop the mask that was given to you from what surrounded and affected you when you were a kid. So your parents, like you would cuss, like your father would cuss, whatever. And then for me, I went traveling and I shed my mask and I came back and I was a man, or, you know, a man child to my parents. And I was thinking, like, so what's happening now? And it, and no one's really immune to it. So I'm talking from people that are kids to people in their, you know, 50s. Well, pretty, you know, let's cap it at 50, right? 50 to 60. This technology thing that swept us all, we're all participating in a way. And maybe people in the 50s are the only ones posting the honest photos of themselves. But anyone under that, you do, and I'm guilty of it myself. You're like, you know, you take a photo and go, oh, shit, look fucking pretty crap in that photo.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, you take another 20 and get the right one.
Yes.
And or the classic, you know, couple that post the gushy shit all the time. It's like, oh my God, this is my soulmate. I can't breathe without it. And they break up 4 days later. So it was all a lie.
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway, so I was thinking about the whole concept of like the real you, like I was craving this, you know, interaction. And it kind of sounds like a little bit like I'm pointing the finger in the song, like go and show me the real you. But in essence, I'm actually saying it to myself as well.
Yeah.
Because I go like, I'm as guilty as anyone. And we're all in the same moment in time where I don't really have an answer. How do you raise a child in this time? How do you demonstrate your own activities where I'm walking around on my phone most of the day doing things, making phone calls, doing stuff. And then we give them a device as a toy.
Yes.
Early on, you know, the men as well.
Yes.
And so it's amusing on that, this moment in time.
Yeah. Have you ever shown your face in its original worn state?
Yes.
Which is
What
many people don't do. I like this line towards the end, it's time to leak disguise.
Oh, that's actually a misprint.
Is it? Which should be?
It's time to delete your disguise.
Oh, time to delete. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, leak actually kind of works as well, but yeah, delete. Okay.
Oh, that's the future. I don't know where these lyrics came from. These are the wrong lyrics.
Okay, this came from a website called Genius Lyrics, so maybe they just interpreted secondhand. Sorry about that.
It's like near genius lyrics. So it's like it's time to delete your disguise, the filter, the shine.
They got that way wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It is a poignant moment of the song, so you're right.
Yeah.
If you were to, I thought you were about to point out those lyrics because I'm reading it upside down.
Like, hang on. Anyway, it's really interesting stuff. How do audience? Well, this is a new album, but in the past, when you've delved into issues like this, how do you find the audience respond to it?
Well, I guess the one thing, if you're familiar with, I guess our perspective is different because I'm inside it. But
yeah,
it seems to be from what people, when we have those real interactions, it shows. You know, when someone, I'm not talking about a fandom moment.
Mm.
Drunken praise. I'm talking about like legit. Someone comes up and says, "Oh man, look, I was fucking dark, and your music was my ladder to get out of that dark moment." It seems like our music is the intense moment to people's lives, like, and it crosses over to might be just the emotion that we're spraying when we're doing it, but people pulling out of something, but maybe also people in the moment of trial are connecting with the same song in the same way. So we're lucky in that way that it's, I feel privileged, I guess, that the music that we write is the soundtrack to those moments in people's lives, because they are like, you know, they're the epic moments of your life you never forget, you know what I mean? And, I feel like this is going to be a good one for people because it's me a bit more bare.
Yeah.
I generally present a pretty evolved character in poetry because I'm at the end of the lesson, you know, where a lot of this album is, shows where it begins, which is often quite in a very anxious, normal state to get into that, you know. Obviously, if I'm giving advice to my kid to treat every challenge as an opportunity to grow, one would hope that I'm putting into practice in my life.
Mm.
And so in these songs, like I'm actually showing, like especially this one called Say What You Long, which is pretty much my battle with occasional epic anxiety that I get. Like I get, like sometimes like it's so fucking irrational and so physical that it's like, and it doesn't feel like it's born in my mind. I feel like it's, well, it obviously is, but and so
doesn't
I sort
feel
of,
like it, yeah.
Yeah, but it's so strong. I just go like, well, how the fuck, why is it happening to me now? I've learned so many things before this. Why? What's triggered it? You know what I mean? Like, how can it be triggered, even if I know what the trigger is? I thought I'd be immune to that. I've done that 12 times now. and so it really captures that moment of when I fall into the darkness and then my journey out of it. So where I normally wouldn't talk about that at the barbecue, for example, but I'm happy to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe if a friend was needed if a friend needed to talk about it and they needed someone else to connect with, I might share that and say, well, hey, fuck, dude, I feel like that too. You might not realise, but this is, yeah.
That is really interesting because, well, it's interesting anyway, but, you know, I'm sure it's happening in Australia too. Here, in recent times, there's been so much more open discussion about mental health issues, anxiety issues. Yeah. It's just a couple of weeks back, quite a well-known news broadcaster died who suffered from depression and became, again, a national talking point. You know, men especially, do we actually open up to each other? Do we ask for help? And the answer often is no. But maybe art like this is a bridge to something a bit better. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I always think about writing music as, you know, I'm like a hippie, but not like a bongo drum hippie. I'm an eternal. when we write music, I always feel like we channel it. I don't feel like it's and someone actually said, look, everyone always in this interview series we're doing, everyone always says, you know, why is this such a personal album? And I feel like I always go to say, it's what the world wanted at this time or what the world needed, and then I always feel sort of weird saying it, I guess. But so this is the first time I actually said it out loud, and so it always comes in my head. But it's I feel like, yeah, it's that conversation needed to happen. It's happening, and then this might be my contribution to it. I never do things in advance, like this is a hindsight observation of why this album turned out like it did. Because when I write lyrics, it could be any time of the day. I go, fuck, it's under it, so that song, and I'll sit down and I'll write them all really quick, and it comes out in one little fast download, I guess. And then you go, where's it getting downloaded from? And I always just feel like a download from the ether would be what I'd say to my close friends. And they'd probably like going, whatever. But to me, it feels like I have trouble joining dots between that amazing music and those lyrics and who I am in my real life, in my character. Like, I feel like I'm way more eloquent in song than in real life, and probably not that smart. Like, that to me sounds like, you know, which makes me think that making music is almost like a, you are channeling, it's almost like you're tapping into some kind of higher thing for a moment, like, rather than just an expression of yourself. And that's what I believe in. So I'm not saying, I'm not pushing that on other people, but that's what it feels like. I just go, where did that come from?
Well, people, you could go to any concert and look at someone in the audience who's having some sort of a moment, which would not be something they get in their normal life, but something about music just takes them somewhere special for them. So it's really interesting how that works. Can I ask you, the time we've got left, you've been very kind and honest in talking about yourself. So your approach to this, where did music come into your life at a very early age or a bit later? How is it that I'm sitting here talking to an Australian guy who's a, you know, are you a full-time musician?
Yeah,
you are. So where did this great journey of yours start? Young or not?
I had a really young mum, so mum was like 17, and so I grew up in like share houses of like, my first memories are sitting in front of us. We got a show called Rage. It's like a music video show on the ABC, and we also lived in the country, so there's only two television stations. So some of my earliest memories are being, because I get up early, and their parents, if you go to 18-year-old mum, she's get a treat. If you have a 30-year-old mum, she's going to get up and start making your pancakes and do shit. But if you've got an 18-year-old mum who's, you know, trying to have relationships with dudes, you know, and lead a normal young person's life. With a toll on kid. Inevitably getting stuck in front of the TV or something's probably going to happen.
Yep.
And so the only thing that would ever be on was this music videos. And so sometimes I hear songs from that era as well, and I go, that is all through my melodies. And like, I go, I don't listen to that in my private life, but I was programmed with it when I was a kid. So like, she loved Led Zeppelin and all of the 80s music, you know, like all those 80s like Ice House and like, and if you do like I reckon if you did some kind of spectral analysis of how we do our choruses and stuff and our vocal melodies, it feels like it's from that age a little bit, like kind of influenced but in a modern shell. So I feel like that, and then I don't know.
Was it the singing or playing an instrument that was the first thing that you sort of dabbled with? No,
I didn't discover music till I was like 17.
Okay.
And so I was kind of a bit of a troubled teenager, I guess. I felt like the mode of the version of happiness that you're sort of given to subscribe to, being like in Australia anyway, it's like get an apprenticeship, go to university, whatever. And I was like, fuck, that all sounds terrible. I don't want to do any of that. And but rather than go feeling like that was unworthy of me, I felt unworthy of it. So thus, I was like, you know, kind of a depressive teenager, and I was like pretty dark, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it was a lot like I had friends and stuff, but I'd spend a lot of that time a bit sort of depressed. And then obviously the inevitable path for someone like that is to discover drugs or something like that, which, you know, I went from being a junior sports star. So I was like an 800 meter runner when I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
Did a 4-minute mile when I was 13.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, like, you know, going, you know, like, goals of going to the Olympics, that kind of stuff. And then very quickly through one night of partying, like, out of the blue, my entire life changed into this, whoa, okay.
Mm.
You know, it shifted me into that,
yeah,
the journey of the mind, I guess. And then I still was, like, you know, could never really, had no drive, nothing, until one night, was at 17, I was at a party, and someone was playing a riff on a guitar, and I was like, and they played a song I liked. I was like, fuck, is that how you make music? Like, man, show me how to do that.
Yes.
And this dude showed me how to play a Slayer riff. And I was like, sitting there, trying to get my fingers to work. Anyway, I spent all night till the sun came up just trying to play this one riff, annoying the fuck out of everyone at the party, trying to sleep. And I called him like 3 days later. I said, dude, I need another riff. He goes, what do you mean? I went, yeah, at the party, you showed me the riff. And he's like, oh, yeah, I don't really remember, but sure. And then he showed me another riff, and I was like, dude. And then I called him up 2 days later, I said, dude, I need another one. Said, I've probably got 3 more riffs, and that's it. And I said, man, do you know anyone else who plays guitar? Said, dude, I'll introduce you to the old man. He plays guitar. And I was like, sick. And then sort of, you know, I just finally, what I finally got, if I'm being a hippie and I think about it, I remember how it made me feel. So I think I got my first feeling of unconditional happiness through my activities, you know what I mean? Because prior to that, my ultimate form of happiness would have felt was hanging out with my family, and then that's obviously a closed bubble where you just feel like you feel, and it's that's natural, it's love, and it's unconditional love. And then when you go, and if you don't know what you want to do with your life, and you go into the world and you go, fuck, all right, let's try woodwork, let's try whatever, let's try fucking working at a soup kitchen, all those, you know,
yes,
and which that one would probably be something that would make me happy, you know, giving something to people. I never tried that, but
it probably would.
Yeah. But anyway, and then it was my first moment of, like, I was, like, going, like, I felt it in my body. My body was humming. I remember going, like, trying to talk to one of my bogan mates, because I grew up in the country, right? So he's sitting there going, dude, I feel like when I play guitar that my fucking, I've got this epic warm feeling in my chest. And it's like, well, settle down, mate. And which is exactly what, like, that's the kind of shit I would talk about. And in a small country town, it's kind of a weird thing to do, you know what I mean? They're like, mate, he's all right, and he's probably a bit of a, he's a bit fucking man. But for me, that was a really real physical sensation. I was like, wow. And then later in life, I could recognize it as it was, I was fed emotionally by something that wasn't my family.
Yeah.
And I found a purpose. And so I never really looked back from there. Like, to my mum's horror, I remember, I think I must have been 16 when I started playing guitar, because I had an older girlfriend, and she finished school in year 11. And mum said, okay, what subjects are we going to do next year for year 12? And I was like, mum, I've got a plan, right? I'm going to go on the dole and become a musician. And her, oh, I just spat on your phone.
And her, right. Don't worry.
Her actual, like, if you still remember her face, it's like she just jolted. And literally, before I could do, like, the next day, because she worked that TAFE, all right? Do you have tape here?
Yeah, I know it's like polytech type sort of stuff.
Isn't it? It's not uni. It's like, no. Don't you need to go to uni again?
Yeah.
Anyway, the next day, I was enrolled in a horticulture class by my mum, who waited at the table. I was like, mum, I don't give a fuck about gardening. And she said, oh, you're not going on the dole. You're not going to the museum. I was like, and so I don't, you know, obviously it was a far-fetched dream back then, but you know, I do bring it up on occasion of family dinners.
Yes, okay, yes.
So, mum, remember when I told you I want to be in a band?
Yes.
And then,
what does she say now?
Oh, she just, you know, probably craps on that she planned it.
Yeah.
Because our age gap's pretty, you know, obviously.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's small as well. So
yeah.
She's more like a cool auntie than a doting mother figure. But.
Wow. That's cool. Hey, have you guys toured in New Zealand before?
Yeah.
You did? Okay.
We toured with I Am Giant, yeah.
Now, I having a look at some of the information regard to this new album, I know you're doing a tour in Australia.
Yeah.
Do you see yourselves coming back over here in the net?
Mm.
Cool.
Yeah, because the rock has been giving us a spin.
Good.
As well. So that's obviously, people generally fall in love with our band,
mm-hmm.
but like alerting them to it in the
yes.
you know, dense sea of music that's available now is obviously the hard part.
Yeah.
And yeah, now the rock are giving us a spin, I feel like it's time we should book it and come over and, you know.
Good.
And
I think you'd go well.
Yeah, well, it was fun doing the tour with Iron Giant. You know, I always saw them as a bit of a New Zealand dead letter. The way that the fans would sing all the words and sing songs, that vibe at their show is very similar to our show.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, we're just a bit better looking.
You would say that.
Yeah. And they write good songs, but come on, let's be honest.
Okay, all right.
Hey, give it the ugly six. Obviously, Shelton. Just kidding, Shelton.
I think that's great. Thank you very much. I'm going to, we can have a bit more of a chat, but I think we'll wind up the interview because this is a good chat to put on our podcast and our website. So, Kim, thank you very much. Hope the new album goes real well. And
yeah.
We'll be there with bells on when you come up for your tour, whenever that might be. I guess we're talking next year at the earliest.
It'll be early next year, oh, yeah.
Great. Well, it's a good time. We like Aussie bands over here.
Yeah, we like to steal your band.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we've heard a bit about that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually true. Like, and they really do try and steal your bands. But you've got a really amazing culture of so many things for New Zealand. It's a beautiful place. I find like your comedy, like fuck, dude. The New Zealand comedy is like leagues ahead of Aussie comedy, I reckon. It's got a really unique flavour. So you might not realise it quite so, but like the Flight of the Conchords, that vampire one.
Oh my. What We Do in the Shadows.
It's so original. Like, that's the thing, like, you know, if you think of things that dominate the frequency we all tap into, like American comedy, and then there's, like, British comedy, but, like, there is Kiwi comedy. It's got its own thing.
Yeah.
Something's happened there. Like,
something has.
Yeah.
A young New Zealand woman got the top prize at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, a stand-up comedian, just the last month or so.
Yeah, right.
And she's of Samoan extraction, and... Yeah, we thought, wow, fantastic, you know, and we kind of were used to every now and then a Kiwi doing well overseas, and because we still think of ourselves as a little place, I guess, especially right next door to you guys, we feel, but then a lot of us go over to where you are to make a living, especially in the culture and arts, but this is why. Anyway, we digress.
Yeah, because she had it from Australia, obviously.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Because I live in Melbourne now, but they're actually one of my favourite bands. General Electric is one of my favourite albums of all time.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think they've just done a tour, or about to do a tour right now in Australia, New Zealand, and she had. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been to fucking 20 of their shows, I reckon. I've actually got a funny story about, I'll part on.
Yes.
I know we did wrap the interview, but we kept it going.
No, that's all good.
So I got really nervous about meeting Johnny Toogood, who's my first time. I've met him a few times now. He never remembers my name, but he's all right. but the first time I met him, I can't believe I'm actually saying this in the story. When you're touring around, like, you basically, you don't eat well sometimes. And we're doing a festival, and we're just about to go on stage. And I was trying to warm my voice up, and I went, fuck, I've got to piss. So I ran to the toilet, and I belted out this really high note while I was whizzing, and I sharted. And of like one of the rare times in my adult life where that happened, and I was like, holy fuck, because I had had sort of tour stomach, we call it, like when you've been eating, you know, late at night, and all kind of food, so it was a bit muddy down there. And anyway, I accidentally sharted, and I was like, holy shit, I'm about to go on stage. And then when you're touring around, having, like, you don't throw underwear away, right? So in this moment of, like, I should just throw them in the bin, I went, fuck, I need to, like, keep these undies, so, like, you know, whip my undies off, clean myself up. And then I went, fuck, and I ran into Shehad's room, and I grabbed the sandwich. I grabbed the Glad wrap that was on top of their fruit platter.
Oh no!
And I wrapped my poopy undies in their sandwich platter. I turn around and like Johnny Toogood's just standing behind me, like, I don't know what I'm doing. And so I've never even told him the story. And I put the thing behind my back so he couldn't see that I had my undies wrapped in his thing.
Yeah.
And he goes, "You right, bro?" I was like, "Oh yeah, man. Hey, dude, I'm a massive fan." So quickly swap shake hands. And I really need a bit of watermelon. But that was okay. There's none in our room. He goes, "Oh, it's cool." You know, he's like, such a nice guy. But I'm a little bit known to him. You know, I was stealing their Glad wrap. That's an exclusive. There you go.
Not a story you hear every day.
No. And then,
cool.
That happened.
Thank you. story.